went to an industrial engineering costing approach. So you know how many assembly and installation hours there are in a given airplane. You start out by estimating. And that has to be well done because that's how you get the work. So you have to give the customer the right stuff. So you take that and you divide it up line every, say, 4 hours, 2 hours. Each position has to be loaded then with operations and time, estimated cost of each operation to total up for the work to be done. And if it's 4 hours, it's 4 hours mm-hmm. of work, see? Basically, you've got, now you can put more people in, but it's the old deal of you try to put two hens on one egg, you don't hatch it any faster. So you have to watch that. But every position has to be loaded. And people sit down, and they take a bracket. When they keep talking about moving back up, they could take it and move it downstream to fill this position with enough work so that everybody's gainfully employed. Now, this is a real trick because you cannot put in accurately enough hours in that position right on the money. Now, in some cases, you do part of the job and the next guy picks it up. Now, he belly aches quite a bit because, or she, because of incomplete work this other fellow does. And there's a tendency, if you have half of it to do here, you fall down to about 4/10 of it, and you slough it down to the next guy, and if they are smart enough, they begin to holler. And the industrial engineer or time study man, time standards, a lot of... Douglas didn't use the term industrial engineer because they had bad experience. But regardless of what you call it, mm-hmm. it has to be performed. Mm-hmm. So we call them time standards people. And they filled out, like making these charts, mm-hmm. and like that production exploded view of the airplane. It's all guesses, the best estimate of talented people. And so in this case, every position has to be filled. And you don't always fill them. And that means that somebody, oh, and the character of the work really gets to be a problem. You may have a job that takes an hour in position 21, and right next to it in position 20, there's another hour's work, but it's a breeze. It's maybe nothing but simple riveting. Over here, it may be fitting precision press-fit bolts or something. So here you've got one, this fellow, he's got an hour's worth of work, and this fellow's got an hour's worth of work. And I use fellow and guy generically, covers all of us. You find that this fellow begins to, he's sweating all the time. He's got inspection. That is a definite inspection point because it's a precisionist point. So the fairness of this distribution is really important. When you bring an unskilled person in there, that unskilled person goes back up the learning curve. And this is a problem. I don't know. And illustrate the plane that it happens with changes. What you get, what we were talking about, the first 10 airplanes on this log paper and time reduction and learning curve is a hodgepodge. It's not accurate. But coming out here, you have a trend line that goes down like this, and it's called an 80% curve. For many years. Now they're, well, we recognize after the failure started doing this too, that certain fabrication can, there's very little learning on a punch press. Mm-hmm. It punches the same speed all the time. So you can't say that they're coming down an 80% curve. They're coming down almost a flat rate out here, see. But then you find another thing that's pretty easy, and it's coming down a 60-year, 40% curve, like that. So, this says, if this is 100 farofarads, and this is 200, on the system of the 80%, it says that this 100 will be 80% of the previous. Every time you double the quantity, the cost goes down 80%. It'd be beautiful if they did that in an automobile. But the same thing applies, actually, there. They just don't do it. But they do it to some degree, but not every time. So now you come along, and the company's experience, we started up high, and the way across and down, and the company's experience looks like that. Now you can have this on what they call a unit curve as well as accumulated average. This point out here covers all the problems back up here. Mm-hmm. But if it's a unit curve, the unit cost may be down here. This may be 3,000 out here. Remember, this is large scale and that's a large scale. So you come along here and there's a group. Now, we could put this diagram here on a position. We can say this position is an average for the whole airplane, and we can use this. So we wouldn't do it on the milling machine in the fab shop, but we're out in assembly. So here we've got a position, and it's position number 20, and the production interval for moving the airplane, in this case, every 4 hours the airplane moves.
Mm-hmm.
Well, to load this position with the proper amount of work is the trick. It may be inaccessible areas to work with. You can't get as much done. It would be real neat if every job you did took 4 hours. Then you'd have a whole bunch of people just taking 4 hours, and they started here, in each case, four of them,
mm-hmm.
and they all finished right there, and the whistle blew, and now we moved the airplane to the next position. It just doesn't work that way. This one slips down, this one cuts off about here, and so forth, and that cuts off there, and so forth. So you look down into position, well, you look at position 19 and 21, and you split work out of there or juggle work back and forth. It's a juggling deal. There is no format that you apply.
So you basically are shifting, say, someone from 19 to pick up that leftover portion,
right.
Or someone from 21 comes in.
And now we're working against the principle, you've got to watch it, because when you start taking stuff, you see number one down here, position number one, the airplane's finished. And this should be a rollout.
Mm-hmm.
And you're out here on the ramp. So the numbers go downhill like this. So I kept saying there that one of the biggest problems is to move the work upstream.
Mm-hmm.
We'd like to take an overload here and move it clear up to position 40. But we find that we can't load it sufficiently, so we go upstream, 21, 22,
mm-hmm.
wherever it is, move the thing down and put it in here. Now this could be a bracket. There's a lot of flexibility. When do you put this bracket in? It's for a pulley
mm-hmm.
in the control system. And you're not going to monkey with the controls until you're down in here. So you can put that bracket in any place as long as it isn't in the way of somebody. So you say, well, I'm picking this bracket out of position 30, and I'm going to put it in here because it will fill this guy's time from mm-hmm. here to here.
Now, would a foreman make that decision on a day-to-day basis?
No, industrial engineers.
Oh, I see.
Now, the foreman, a sharp foreman, makes an awful lot of inputs
mm-hmm.
because he says, my people are not working. Now, every job that they do here has, at a given airplane number, if this is airplane number 50 or 51, a job in there takes 6/10 of an hour. There's a job in there that on airplane number 51 at a given day, the job takes 6/10 of an hour. Well, if we apply the learning curve to that 6/10, if that's, say, we're just rhythm, we have reason to believe that we'll shrink down and maybe eventually we'll do it for 2/10 of an hour. So, but it may be ship 151 or 351 before we get it to 2/10. But there's only people working to do that. Now, a sharp foreman, now we put a lead man over position. One other thing we should do, if this is the assembly line here, and it's filled with airplanes and it's moving in this direction, the most desirable thing in the world would be to take this position here, position 20, and right opposite position 20, put the stock room for everything that goes into this position. Mm-hmm. And right opposite that, put the sub-assembly. Or assembly. Mm-hmm. Now, then you would put one foreman in charge of position 20. He had his own stock room. He delivered the parts there. They don't stop off any other place. They go right to him. Now, I'm sorry, I reversed these. The stock room should be over here. So I'll just make that installation.
Now that, so for instance, all the rivets, etc., would be in that stock room for that position.
Yeah, you have what's known as the frivets, which is always made up of rivets, mm-hmm. washers, nuts, and bolts that are not highly stressed. So you'd have a whole bunch of, you'd have tubing in there, you'd have equipment, you know, drills and riveting mm-hmm. equipment and other equipment. And that would all be, plus there's what I call the free list, would all be in here. And in effect, this stock room would have a bunch of bins in it, and this foreman would be over this whole thing. Now that, when you plan a production line, you're planning to do something like this, you, the best one I've always found is to optimize the concept. What would be the best theoretical approach? Because you don't know yet, you haven't got the airplane. Well, the best theoretical approach would be to do this. If every position could be broken down, have its own little stock room, its own little sub-assembly and installation, the installation would go into here, and the installation items is what that's supposed to represent. And the foreman puts them all in there, like this, that means he's got a worker here. You give him a stock room, you don't put a stock room attendant there. So he's got maybe two workers here, and maybe he's got one here, and one here, one here. And he's in charge now of four people, plus whatever it takes here on the installation and some assembly. This here, and this here, and the position here, in making installation items, collecting them, and sub-assembly, and then doing the actual work here, putting them on the airplane, he would have four or five or six people. And you'd take care of his position. And he'd always know that the first airplane, well, they gave him 6/10 of an hour. Ultimately, he's going to have to get that down to some lower figure. Now, he'd like to leave it that way, but then it becomes wrong. But then the fellow at the position over here, he had a soft job. This fellow has a precision job. He paid him the same. it's difficult to do that. You try to distribute. Now later on, they can appeal, and we might redistribute to relieve this guy. But there's always the argument, hey, you've been doing it for quite a while. Why should we break a new crew in? Because once you break a new guy in, if you're down here, you break the new guy in, he may start at the bottom in there. So then you have to pay for this area under the curve here. You'd like to hire him off the street and he starts right exactly where you were. But he comes in and he doesn't know his way around, or she doesn't know her way around, and you're slow to comprehend. So they go back up the learning curve, is what the phrase is. And they go back up the learning curve, you have to pay for the triangle here.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the cost of losing somebody and hiring a green hand.
Well, what happens in terms of the distribution of work among the other three people, say, who may be already lower down the curve?
Well, this new person may hold up one of those people that may be a really new team, you
mm-hmm.
see, that's working on the 770. Or he has three people that stay with him when they bring the fourth one in. Generally speaking, they all pitch in and try to bring this guy down the line faster,
mm-hmm.
like this, instead of following the traditional experience or learning curve. He comes down real fast because he came from Lockheed, and you know, he knows how to read it and read it. The only thing that throws in the dimensions that tolerances are different, and the tools are different, and the atmosphere is different. Various things mug him up, but after a week or two, he picks it up pretty fast, and he starts down the curve like this. And, well, he beats it more than this thing here because he's got down to this level, and really the remaining thing from this whole piece here is just this little piece here, kind of spherical triangle, and he's come down and reached this point after, well, airplane numbers can be related to the calendar if you want to do it. So he's come down here in a few weeks. He's right down where the old guy was all the time. Now, he tends to flatten out because the group is working with a system that they should only be there. So the fact he reaches it here, you say, well, he should keep right on going like that. Well, he can't because the control of the stock room, sub-assembly, and things like that, depending on who he is. He might find a way of doing that. The guys that have done just exactly that. But it shows up the rest of the group. Now, if the prior mechanic that's being replaced was lazy, just trying to stay out of the army or something like that, you can see where a person could go right on down. The new guy conscientious gets right on down the curve. Now, changes do the same thing. You get a big change from engineering right here, and the thing goes up like that. And you come down on your hope, and come down like that. As you introduce the change here, that by the time you would normally have been down here, you curve down this line. It's characteristic that these things tend to curve because the whole project's there when you get there. There's a lot of bugs are going down ahead of time. So instead of the guy going up here and taking a long time, or the change taking a long time for these people to put in the effect and go down like that, then that's kind of disastrous. You're losing an awful lot of knowledge. Well, basically, that's what you do at a position, and each of these workers is assigned specifically what they're to do. They're to drive 18 rivets and put this bracket on with these four bolts and trim an edge or whatever it might be.
Mm-hmm.
and that adds up to 0.6 an hour, and it's shown, it's on a bar chart, a typical chart like that would have for one worker, I'm going the wrong direction here, well, let's assume that one worker got 4 hours of work. Now the next worker has two chunks, and they get 4 hours. The next worker is riveting here and drilling here.
Mm-hmm.
See? So this job here takes 0.3 an hour, and this job here takes 0.2. So there's 0.5 of work to be done. Now that doesn't fit with the rest. It's been so long since I've thought of these things that my arithmetic will backfire on me, but basically that's what happens. You don't have to have exactly 4 hours of work. Now this person may have really 3 8/10 work.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a little piece here that there's no way to use it. In some cases, you could take a piece that was left over and run them back into subassembly. You could move your people back
mm-hmm.
and forth.
And that would be the foreman's decision at that time?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Now, that might be pointed out to the truth. But the idea is that it's all planned with how much time it takes to do a job, and that time must come down the experience curve.
Mm-hmm.
So everything relates to that curve. And the company's history is not right on the old trend line. It bounces up and down.
Mm-hmm. Now, in, say with the B-17 or the C-47,
yeah.
Each position would be structured like that with a foreman over a
yeah.
position.
Yeah.
And then how many, what would be the role of the leadman, and how many would be under the foreman in that particular position?
Well, this brings in span of control concepts. If you were in a difficult part of the airplane, the lead man may have 4 people. If you're back in nothing but riveting, just plain old riveting, you can run, depending on the individual, 8 to 12 people. Now, in some cases, there is no lead man. He's called a foreman.
Oh.
There's been a big move over the years to do away with the term lead man, because that's a clock job, and the lead man is, as they used to say, neither fish nor fowl. He belongs to the union, and he's part of management. In
mm-hmm.
fact, he's the first solid layer of management.
Mm-hmm.
So by changing him to a foreman, he leaves the union influence. But there's a time when there was no union, and you could do some of those
mm-hmm.
things. But you don't want to overload if you have it. You don't want to give the guy that has the precision work, make him handle 12 people, and then the fellow that he's competing with has got done nothing but riveting and has 12 people too. And they both do a fine job, but when it comes to promotion, do you really look at what one did as against the other?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe the fellow that didn't have the precision work spent more time supervising and learned more. He may be a better fellow because he had less to do and he got the hang of it.
Yeah. Now, would the legion also be doing some of the actual work functions as well, or basically
yeah,
just supervising?
He's allowed to do, they call them working lead men, at one time, he was expected to do 80% of the work. But when the union came in, this changed quite a bit. And again, you get into the case of what the individual is doing, the nature of the work can be quite different. But the best thing was to make a foreman in getting out of this position.
But the leadman would be, say, in the final assembly position, where rather than, would you also have lead people in your sub-assembly and in your installation?
Yeah. Now, I said that was the idealized approach. So now you start with that, and you see if you can make it work. And the further you get away from that, the less efficient it would be in the conceptual sense, at least. So you find it doesn't work, but you find that it makes sense to stop the parts out there, whether he does the work or not. You might have the work done right across the aisle, say, and everything is right there for his control, and the lead man can see the sub-assemblies being made, and there's a common stock room, and if the parts are short, he might have to put it on later himself. Or the idea is always to get the work as much together as you can. If you take all the sub-assemblies and put them in another building, you're going to have trouble, because just merely carting them from over there, some of them fall off the little flat trucks, get run over. Shorty chasers will catch one going around the corner and steal parts that are needed in another place, and things like that. So it's, and they do all these things. And I would, I can see if I were under pressure doing the same thing. Watch the train go by with 15 of these flats on it. And as it went around the corner, the driver can't see you, and you just filch parts out. So. And then there's the group that constantly creates a shortage in that they hide parts that they know traditionally are going to be short, or they've heard they're going to be short. So they get more than their share, and particularly if it's used at several different positions, if he gets more than his share, he salts it away someplace, and you're always short, and you don't know why.
Now, would that be the foreman usually who would do that, the leadman?
Workers could do it, too. It's a human thing to do.
Was there a fair amount of competition between, say, would you call the people in a single position a crew? What would you call that unit of people on a single position?
Yeah, it'd be a group.
Was there competition between the crews in the different positions?
You're always in the problem of trying to optimize the load in a position with fairness to the time standards, and sometimes the time standards are horribly off. You get somebody in there with a stopwatch that just out of school and thinks he knows what's going on, and he puts down unrealistic times. And the people spot that because they're doing the work. Now, right next to him, he may do the same thing and take twice as much time that he puts down. So here's and the worker nurses the job. It's a soft touch. Boy, they watch it because their view is it's not my job to straighten this out. And it won't last very long because some people catch it. But while it is lasting, I want to get the benefits, which made me think of something else. If you zero in too much on those costs, you upset people. And they have a system. There are all sorts of underground systems, sub-Rosa systems. One of the most convenient is what they call banking. For instance, you take that one group at position 20, and they do a certain thing, and suddenly the spares goes up in that. And the spares people haven't priced the spares right. They priced it with a good profit note. And suddenly, six of them are made in that assembly area, sub-assembly area. And they're given an allowance of 12 hours. And they get them all out in 4 hours. Well, they bank the remaining 8 hours and keep track of it, and the charge number, and when they need it, because something's always going wrong, to keep management out of the way. They will spend from this bank. They may have dropped an assembly and damaged it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, to repair that assembly, they don't have any money to repair it, because those are estimates for doing the job, not for dropping parts and repairing them. So it's tough to go get repair time, because it reflects then on your ability. So you got a bank. So you draw on the bank, and you turn in a charge against those spares. And it's a strange thing. I remember one case where they were able to use